I'm David Halpin. I was an orthopaedic and trauma surgeon, and I still am in my mind. I help quite a few people give advice when they can't get any advice from doctors at present. And I retired a bit early for reasons of ill health, but I recovered from that ill health, and I spent most of my last 21 years standing up for the Palestinian people.
Now, can you just tell us about your trips over there, and one particularly memorable one?
Yes. Well, the first, I knew that Palestine was the hinge of our humanity. Unless that so-called conflict, an awful euphemism, was solved, then the world would never be at peace. And I also know that since the Second World War, the Western, in inverted commas, Western nations have been maiming and starving and bombing people endlessly, all without any judicial response from the international, inverted commas, community. So I decided to take a ship. I went to a meeting in November 2002 up in London, Mallet Street, big meeting. People came from the States and from Palestine, Barghouti from Palestine, people like that. It was a good meeting, but I heard that there were British doctors going to Gaza with antibiotics in their cases, who were being stopped from taking those for sick children in Gaza, and I was incensed. I decided to take a ship so big that they couldn't stop it easily, and that was in November and December of 2002. Over Christmas, I crystallized my thoughts with the help of a wonderful journalist who was then on the Western Morning News, a good paper then, now in the hands of Wretch, not Reach, Wretch PLC. Neil Young was wonderful. He'd become a friend already because of our interests in generalized socialism. We wouldn't go into that. But Neil thought my idea was good, and he supported me. So that was over Christmas. I kept it quiet from Sue, who I thought would be frightened by it, my wife Sue. But during that January, with the help of John Hingley, a trawler skipper, and his wife and other people, I searched for a vessel. I found sources of food to take nominal aid in the boat. And eventually I chartered a Danish cargo vessel, SSS Barbara. So I started, first of all, I have to say that on the 3rd of January, in the Western Morning News, because of the help I had from Neil Young and a wonderful editor, a fellow called Barry Williams, it was number one, page one, page two, and page three, The Voyage of the Dove and the Dolphin. The dove for the cliched symbol of peace, the dolphin because I'd worked with John Hingley's wife, Linda, ex-wife Linda, who was appalled by the killing of dolphins in the channel with the bass pair trawling. I'd helped her quite a lot with that. So the dolphin was a symbol of what we do to the natural world. So the Voyage of the Dove and Dolphin was publicised on the 3rd of January via the Western Morning News. The publicity was vital for the safety. Unless you are, if you're doing things cloak and dagger, you're more likely to be injured by people like the Zionists. So it was well in the open, and I actually liaised with a so-called officer in the Israeli embassy, Dan Shaham, from Morocco. But that's another matter.
Dan Shaham. That's interesting, because I've come across him.
Have you?
Through the Glasgow Herald's foreign editor. He was the chap who said that there was going to be a bomb attack early on the morning of the 7th of July 2005. A warning. They'd obviously got a warning at the Israeli embassy. Dan Shaham is the same chap.
Well, Dan Shaham was cooperative, but I would say wily. Fair description.
Well, I mean, if you know there's about to be a bomb attack somewhere on the London Underground, the London Tubes, etc., you would have thought that it was important to make the Metropolitan Police aware of that, yes, and the British authorities aware, rather than just your own embassy staff.
Yes, and of course there were at that time an Israeli posse in London, and they were warned, weren't they, before they went, they were in a hotel somewhere in East London.
Well, just an Israeli posse. It was Benjamin Netanyahu, yes, who was the finance minister.
Yes, I know.
The same. Mr. Netanyahu.
I thought it was Netanyahu. We'll leave that aside. So, on the 1st of February, that was within a month of the voyage being publicised. It was followed by interviews with Richard and Judy, Sky, excellent interview, other people like that.
Can we just recycle us slightly? What year was this?
This was 2003. This was within 8 weeks of the promised war on Iraq, not with Iraq, on Iraq, led in this country by Blair, the paramount psychopath and war criminal, who had agreed in April of the previous year at the Crawford Ranch with Bush that Britain would be with him, with the Americans, in destroying Iraq.
So that journey, tell us about what happened. Did you actually go on it yourself, or did you just organise it?
No, I organised it. I led the whole thing. And my brain, I hardly slept. My brain was racing. All sorts of things happened. I found the supply. I found 40 tons of organic flour from Shipton Mill, olive oil, all sorts of things.
You're taking olive oil in?
In. They couldn't get olive oil in Gaza, or it was a rarity. We took honey from Devon beekeepers, a ton of honey, because honey is revered in Palestine. It was, of course, they were all beekeepers in this pastoral society, which was Palestine. It was full of flowers. It was the land of milk and honey, Tony.
So did you go on this trip yourself then?
I was the charterer. I took three Britons with me. The busker of Boscastle, John Morne, who could raise the spirits of the people in Gaza by singing unaccompanied and beautifully. John Hingley, the trawler skipper. I learnt later more about John. And I also took a fellow. I was working with CIFAR, which was an organisation dealing with young men who were going in and out of prison. And I was looking after a young fellow called David, actually, the eldest of four. But I phoned up Lieutenant Philpott, who was the training officer previously at the depot on the other side of Exeter, and I said, have you got a lad who might like to come to Gaza with me? Because if he may have been involved in violence, he will see real violence in Gaza, meted by the occupier. And he's produced a lovely fellow called Stuart. He died, actually, 6 months ago, and his mother has been in contact with me, and she made a contribution to go to Gaza in memory of Stuart.
So you must have had some trouble getting insurance for that trip, did you?
It all came later. Sue was at home worrying about things like demurrage, all sorts of things about maritime law I didn't know about, all sorts of things. But she had the help of Yusuf Zawari, the eldest of four. His mother's British, living in Jerusalem, in East Jerusalem, and his father Palestinian. And Yusuf, I got to know. I can't remember how the connection happened, but he's a tribologist. He's a material scientist at Queen Mary College in London. A highly intelligent chap, but he was at home with Sue working out all these difficult things like insurance.
Anyway, I mean, obviously, if you think about that stuff before you start, it will probably never happen, but you were just determined to do it, and you realised that...
I was absolutely determined. I wanted to show our common humanity with the people who'd been under the heel for then about 60-something-8 years. It's now 72 years, but it's longer than that. It goes back to early 1900s, in fact.
So did your Devon honey and organic flour get through?
It all got through, but we went, if you look at the film, Eyes Open Gaza, you can find it on the usual browser. It's a 20-minute film made by Yusuf with a friend of Andrew's of Caribbean origin, or African origin, Phil, filled Ireland, and they made it from clips from television and from some interviewing of me. But it was to show our common humanity. We brought this symbolic aid, the 40 tons of flour. There was a ton of cheese from the Mendips, from the Ellis brothers, things like that. It was good food, all very wholesome. It had a big pack of dressings from an ex-Palestinian doctor, Dr. Hamami in Buckinghamshire, and it was full of love. We also took knitted garments for the little ones that people had knitted here, and blankets, things like that, because the winters in Gaza can be very cold indeed. It's in fact a continental climate by the time February comes. So it was filled with love and with a very, very strong spirit. But apart from embracing our Palestinian sisters and brothers, it was also a cry against the looming war in Iraq, which I was writing about. My articles about that were often published in the Western Morning News by Barry Williams.
What we've seen over the last couple of months, though, is gone beyond, I think, anything that's happened in that region, probably maybe even since the Crusades or since the Second World War, the First World War, actually. What do you make of it? Is it something that you were surprised or you expected it?
No, it is a Holocaust. It isn't, inverted commas, genocide. Genocide is a rather general term, defined first by Lemkin, a Polish Jew. I always put Jew in small J, in inverted commas, because we're all Mongols, as you know. And there's good and bad amongst all these ethnic groups. There seems to be a particularly bad influence of the Khazarians in the origin of the so-called Ashkenazim. 80% of the Israeli population are Ashkenazims. They have no genetic connection with the people who were tribes in Judea and Samaria. That's a fact. That was Sands, I think, an Israeli, who defined that, and other people who defined it too.
Now, some people have said that it's about 15,000 people have been killed, innocent people, by the bombing by the Israeli Defense Force and their Hellfire missiles and various other missiles raining down from the sky. Others are saying that it may be up to 40 or 50,000 people get dead because there is such many of them just crushed and dying and dead underneath buildings. And also, of course, the Israelis have been cutting off the telecommunications, so it's been very difficult to get accurate figures.
And killing journalists. They've lost over 50 journalists in Gaza. And I understand that you have also come across journalists who've been targeted in the Lebanon. Is that right?
Well, if you remember, back in 2003, to go back there for a minute, we had Terry Lloyd heading out with the British and the American forces, only to be killed by, certainly ITN's investigation said it was the Americans and the British that had killed our own ITN journalist. Yes. But the reason here is because this whole idea of embedding journalists with the army inside their tanks, they much prefer to have the journalists under control like that. Yes. And ITN obviously didn't really want that. They wanted to have somebody who was outside and able to just think for themselves, to give the public a view which wasn't controlled by the army.
Not
and
like
Terry
our,
didn't last 5 minutes.
Not like our friend Simpson, who was embedded. You know, the symbol of the BBC. Now, to go back, it is a Holocaust. I'm not surprised, but you can imagine that having gone to Gaza 10 times, first of all on the voyage, and you'll see it on the film, we were held in Ashdod. We couldn't go to Gaza. It's a fishing port. The SS Barbara, which was 66 metres long, about 1,000 tons dead weight, it was insufficient water in the fishing port of Gaza. They were, in fact, building a roll-on, roll-off port in Gaza, just south of the city. The Saudis were funding it. The French were building it in 2000. And surprise, surprise, the Zionist entity bombed it, just as they bombed the Arafat airport the same year, I think. They didn't want any communication. They wanted these people to be surviving on about $1.2 per day per head. I saw the poverty, and I've seen I've seen so much of Gaza. They're in my blood. I found them to be a noble people, remarkably resilient, steadfast, suffering terribly. It's all on the film.
Well, one of the reasons that this is happening is because many of these people's parents, grandparents, back even possibly thousands of years, are buried in these pieces of land that the Israelis wanted to take over. But one of the fascinating things about this time is that you've actually got Zionists out on the street in Tel Aviv, and in fact they've been out there, the Jewish Israeli residents, ever since the beginning of 2023, protesting against Netanyahu, who has now taken dictatorial powers. And that's not me, that's Haaretz I'm quoting. You've also got Zionists out on the streets of London protesting against Netanyahu and against the genocide, the bombing, the failure to negotiate, the failure to even think about a ceasefire, apparently. So what do you make of this? Because it almost seems as if the Zionists have split into the people who have a dream of a peaceful world around Jerusalem, and those who have got this idea, a bit like the Hitlerian idea of Lebensraum, that they haven't got enough space, they need to grab more land around there, the greater Israel bloc in charge.
Well, I've written a lot about the Brook of the Nile to the Euphrates, written about that, and the key document to read is Oded Yinon, 1982, translated by a atheist Israeli, ex-Polish, called Israel Shehak, a decent man, by all accounts, and he translated into English, so you can see what the plan was. And the plan was to decimate, to destroy all the Arab nations and peoples for greater Israel. And it may be even wider than that. If you look at the way the COVID lie was run, a lot of it was centered in Tel Aviv, and there is no doubt that there is a fraction, or even perhaps a large fraction, of the Zionist, the death cult, who in fact want to see global domination.
Well, hang on, because Bill Gates doesn't live in Tel Aviv, as far
He doesn't, but I'm quite sure he's serving them. They're on the blur all the bloody time, I think.
Well, hang on, what about, I mean, because you've got this thing which is really the Anglo-Zionist Empire, which is a whole movement that runs right through Britain. Well, not right through, thank God, but it's very, very powerful in Britain through King Charles.
Yes.
It's in the United States,
yes,
through the deep state there. And obviously through these, I mean, they talk about the Five Eyes, don't they? We really know it's the Six Eyes.
Six Eyes, yes.
Which includes the Israeli intelligence.
No question. And I deduced back in 2006, I came back enraged by what was happening, the destruction of what I call the temple of the family, the house. It is the temple of the family. You know, when a mother and a father with their children are sheltering under a roof, that is their house. If you see little concrete shacks in Gaza, you'll know that the United Nations was evil from the word go. They were given concrete, ballast and concrete, to make concrete blocks for these ghastly little places that they have, two rooms usually. You'll see on the film how they use a shower room for the kitchen in one of the little dwellings they went to. That was Yusuf and Phil and myself and other people. So we've seen what's been going on. And what I say, Tony, is that what's happening now, as I've been weeping inside, as you will imagine, because I can imagine adults and little ones underneath this vast amount of concrete that they're caused by their bombing. They've in fact been carpet bombing the north. Jabalia, if you see the BBC has a clinical record of all the things, as aerial photographs, it is absolutely appalling. It means they've got no homes. It means they've got tents for this winter, as they had when they were refugees back in 1948.
But look, what's in it for Britain? What's in it for America? Why is Rishi Sunak supporting this? No, why is Biden support? Why Petraeus actually seems to be running the whole show in communication directly with the chief of staff of the IDF.
I didn't know about Petraeus. But the thing is, if you look at my piece, which I've just given you, Tony, the vortex sucks forever louder. It was the second meeting of Alternative View set up by wonderful Ian Crane, who gave me a voice. He gave me a voice, and I give tribute to the late Ian Crane. if you look at the vortex, actually, if allowed, it's quite long, lots of images, but I analyse why we were doing what we were doing then and what we're doing now. And then now I am determined, what I say, there must be a Nuremberg 2 when we will bring Netanyahu and Gallant and all the other psychopaths who've been voicing things like human animals and what have you from Tel Aviv. We will bring Blair and Bush, and we will think about Harold Wilson, who gave the Chagos Islands away to the Americans.
Well, he's dead. What do you mean, in Nuremberg?
We must.
The thing is, you're not going to get a Nuremberg. Even if you go to the International Criminal Court in The Hague, there's no chance of really getting them to do anything. They only prosecute black African leaders.
Tony.
Also, within Israel itself, the Supreme Court has now been commandeered by Netanyahu.
There will be a Nuremberg too. The one thing that is the people in Gaza, they've been living on their knees for years and years. It got worse after they voted. 47% in a scrupulous election voted for Hamas. When Netanyahu talks about destroying Hamas, he's talking about destroying a political party, in effect, and not the Al-Qassam Brigade or any militant offshoot.
Well, he's talking about destroying an idea that people want to resist oppression.
Yes, resist oppression. They're no longer going to stay on their knees. They know in sacrificing their lives and their limbs and their sight and their dear children, they know the world is now noting what the Zionists are about.
Well, one positive thing that's come out of all of this is there's 10 or 12 countries now have just withdrawn their ambassadors from Israel. I think also the other amazing thing is the enormous marches that they've been going on in London. Particularly, it's been going up and up in numbers, and we had a whole week where the entire press was advertising the fact that there was going to be a big march in London for Palestine on Saturday, which is, I've never seen that before. But that on that day, something between 750,000 and possibly even 1 million people turned out on the streets in support of Palestine in Britain.
Equivalent to the march before the Iraq War on the 16th, I think it was, of February, and we heard the reports on the ship's radio when we were hove to off Ashdod. So we heard that actually then. A massive march, and they're being replicated now because people know there is innate goodness in many people, and they know when there is elemental evil, and they're reacting. And they've now seen the death cult, the Zionism. They've seen the truth of it.
You come up with this term Armageddonist, which I rather like. Yes. I mean, officially, you can see them as the accelerationists. They want to accelerate the end of the world.
Yes, they do.
But the Armageddonists, I rather like the term. It's almost as if there is a nuclear armed doomsday cult.
That's right. It is. Well, just think that America has been advertising first strike nuclear war for about 15 years. And they now have their so-called tactical nuclear weapons. The smallest, I think, is about twice Hiroshima. But you can tell you, it's all on my writing. There are at least two Dolphin Israeli submarines cruising in the Persian Gulf now. They've had enlarged...
Supplied by for free from Germany, weren't
they? Well, some of them were. By Krupp. In fact, you couldn't make it up. It's an offshoot of Krupp that made the Nazi weapons in the war. And these Dolphin submarines have enlarged torpedo tubes to take nuclear-tipped cruise missiles. It's all in a piece I wrote in May 2019 on global research.
But this is understandable for a country that thinks that its very existence is threatened, isn't it?
It wants...
Actually, Germany, interestingly, has been banning Palestine marches. It's been arresting supporters of Palestine.
The fact is, Tony, that we live in this country, in a fascist country. It's been fascist for decades. I was told the other day, I think by BBC News, I watch it just fleetingly, its bias at the moment is obscene.
Well, it's not as obscene as the Sky, and particularly talk radio, Rupert Murdoch's various outlets, because he has oil concessions with Jacob Rothschild, Genie Energy, in the Golan Heights, which is occupied by the Israelis, you know, a part of Syria, actually.
Yes, yes, I know that. But I understood the other day that the police were giving out leaflets prior to the march on Saturday, which contained chants or phrases which would not be, which would be regarded, I assume, as illegal. I imagine that when they were given the leaflets, I imagine if I was in the crowd, I make quite sure that I shouted the slogans which were which were banned by the fascists in Downing Street. The fact is that we have an illusory democracy.
Well, is this from the river to the sea?
Yeah, river to the sea.
Well, this thing is, this is nothing, really.
I know, nothing. No, it, in fact, it talks about Palestine.
Palestine will be free. That doesn't mean to say that there will be any oppression of Jews, does it?
No, it will be like Leila Khalid said, it will be a land for all citizens, Jews and Christians and Muslims, living at peace, respecting each other, under the laws of a state.
There's been a lot of pressure on the media and the, I suppose, the police as well, to take sides here. Actually, if you listen to any of Murdoch's outlets or read them, you'll see they have taken sides with the, I mean, fact, the way the BBC do it, I think, is a bit more subtle, where they are interested in the release of the hostages from the Israeli side,
yes,
but they're not interested in the release of the hostages from the Palestinian side.
Well, the thing,
the prisoners.
Well, they talk about hostages, as you know. I say in my pieces, in my emails, that they've been taking thousands of hostages every year, down to the age of 12. They get tight plastic handcuffs, kicked into the back of a jeep, taken off to the Moscow Center or somewhere like that, sometimes tortured psychologically, night turned to day in their cells. It's all on my websites.
There's something happening here, though, because there's been a systematic dehumanization, as Gideon Levy talks about, indoctrination of young Israelis to really think of Palestinians as subhuman, rather like the Nazis thought about the Gypsies, the Nazis thought about the Slavs, you know, this sort of thing.
Exactly.
Or the Jews, funnily enough.
Yes, or the Jews, exactly.
And isn't it interesting how the connection between what's happening now and the Second World War, the Zionists did this deal, the Havara Agreement in 1932 or 33, with the Nazi Party, whereby Jews would be shipped out to Israel and given Palestine it was at the time. And it's almost as if those that didn't buy into this whole idea of Zionism, that stayed in Europe after that, Nazis occupied it, were just simply exterminated, those that didn't agree. So we have lost a whole rabbinic tradition of Judaism in the whole of Europe that was maybe not that interested in Zionism and thought it was some kind of heresy.
It wasn't it. You know, one of my great friends was Hedy Epstein, who I refer to on my website. But Hedy was in a settle in East Germany, I think, and most of the people in her community were in fact pro-Zionist, she told me, but she was anti-Zionist, her family were. She in fact was the stenographer or witness at the Nuremberg trials, and later she in fact became very energetic against Zionism, a very wonderful lady who was treated abominably by the Israelis when she was going in and out, you know, through Ben Gurion, strip searched and the rest of it. I digress. The fact is that I'm thinking of children, adults, lying conscious, with perhaps with limbs severed or trapped under concrete, and dying with concrete dust in their lungs. There'll be thousands, Tony. You're yet to be discovered. There's a smell of death, apparently, in parts of Gaza.
Well, I bet there is, yeah.
Of course there is. The temperatures are still fairly high. This is the smell of death. I remember the lady who was in the Wren's officer. She lived down the village here. She was in Plymouth when they blitzed that, the Nazis, and she said there was a smell of death in Plymouth. It was a very severe blitz there. I told you about my father's business in Southampton. So we have what the key book is, The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine by Ilan Pappe. It was published in 2006. It survives, unlike some books, which are destroyed, like the books of Khalid, of Leila Khalid. I won't go into that now, in fact, but her book is rare, apparently, for some obvious reason. But his book, if you read it, is absolutely chilling. They were doing what the Germans are doing in Barbarossa. They were exterminating people just like that. They would, when they were cleansing a village, they would sometimes, later on, they bombed it, but previously to that, they shelled it. They shelled Haifa, they shelled Lida. But for the villages, they used to surround it, beat them up. They had intelligence officer, Israeli Zionist intelligence officer, who had lists of names, and they then, in fact, would find an informer in the village. He would come in hooded, and they then would read out the names of the men. They'd have the men segregated from the women, from the ages of 10 up to 50. They'd read out the names, and if those names were, they'd been in the Arab revolt, if they had been fighting the Zionist infiltration of Palestine in the 30s, they were labelled and singled out. They were taken aside and shot, just like that. And sometimes they were shot in front of their relatives, their mums and their wives, and sometimes the survivors were in fact, then detailed to bury them in a pit. It's there in Ilan Pape's remarkable book. It's well written. It's referenced in the most wonderful way. I've been reading it again recently. And what is happening in Gaza now is just the extension. It was all forecast in Ilan's book. Who took notice of it? Who has been brought to book for the crimes of the Zionists, for the crimes of Britain, say in Kenya when we castrated the Mau Mau, or took their fingers off with that anaesthetic? Who's been brought to book? Over 30 countries that America has bombed since World War II. No one. There will be a Nuremberg II, Tony.
Well, you certainly hope so.
I'm going to work towards it. Before I die.
One of the things of looking at the whole current situation in this humanitarian pause, I know it's a difficult question to answer. We're chatting on Monday. Do you think that midnight tonight they're going to start bombing again? The Israelis' defence minister has said that they will, but we're not sure.
Well, they talk about the ground operation on BBC. My dear friend Joe Clark-Irons in Torquay, who keeps me well informed, she says that well into the truce, there were people returning to their wrecked homes in northern Gaza, I think probably in Jabalia or perhaps in Beit Hanun, and I presume a sniper. Two or three were killed, and nine were shot in the legs.
Well, that could, of course, be foreign. It might not be Israelis. They may even be SAS or American Special Forces hanging around.
Well, I understand they're involved as well. And I learned from another of my friends for Palestine, from Alan Horton, that there have been records of flights, RAF transport flights, from Cyprus to Ben-Gurion or Lida Airport. As
yes, there was a D-notice put up sent to all the newspapers saying don't report any of this.
I think Alan told me that actually, really. But we have the elemental evil of our country, our illusory democracy, our fascist country, cooperating with the death cult.
I suppose one of the most fascinating things happened over the last few weeks is the re-emergence of this chap David Cameron.
Oh, yes. And he was speaking in very moderate terms, I notice. They fly as if they're supersonic. He's in London one moment, beaming, looking slightly older. Next thing, he's in Tel Aviv, speaking to his friends and shaking hands with the quisling, the liar, Mahmoud Abbas, aged 88. A quisling of the First Order.
Okay, so where is this all going? Because the Israelis have already said they want to have a war with Iran. They did make a bit of an attempt to blame the Iranians for this infiltration of Hamas. And also, there was a lot of questions about how many Israelis were actually killed by the IDF rather than Hamas.
Yes, well, there's no question about that. There was a gunship, Apache Hun. They have 300 Apache helicopters, by the way. But the Apache helicopter was apparently firing on houses and civilians in that kibbutz, very close to the security wall and the underground wall.
Is this another crusade? Because back in medieval times, I mean, I think we thought this had all finished. It's almost as if they're on a mission to turn the Holy Land into hell.
Yes, it is, Tony. It is the Antichrist of the Christian religion. And I said to Joe the other day, I said, you know, Joe, this all started with the Pilgrim Fathers. And it's very appropriate that Joe and I, a month ago, down to join the people supporting Palestine. I met two good doctors there from Palestine, one a heart specialist. But I said, it's appropriate that we speak in Plymouth, because when these zealots went across to bring the word to a people, divided into tribes, but who lived swiftly and with nature in a most wonderful continent. And they had a very deep philosophy too, actually, which we can only now grasp, perhaps. But they went there. They were helped to survive by the Massasoit Indians in Massachusetts. Chief Massasoit led them in this peaceful help. They were, in fact, only surviving on limpets from the seashore in the winter. The cold winter, very cold in Massachusetts. I've been there for 6 months. I know it. But in the spring, the Massasoits showed the incoming Plymouth Fathers, whatever they were called, the Pilgrim Fathers, they showed them how they should plant a herring with the maize seeds because the soil was spewy and infertile. So they were able to survive with the help of the local North American Indians. That was the start of it, Tony. They thought they were superior. That started a genocide of 20 million North American Indians.
Well, some say 40 million.
Well, smallpox in the blankets, the rifle from British, later on from Birmingham Small Arms. It was like Rhodes in Africa, a Bible in one hand and a rifle in the other. The European whiteys, have a great deal to answer for, and some of the leaders like Bush and Blair will be in Nuremberg too, ere long, Tony.
This is the new world that was being taken over from Bristol, by the way. Yes. John Cabot discovered it, supposedly, even though really the Phoenicians are almost certain, and they probably knew that it was there. This was the making it public.
Because
they were making it public because they wanted mass migration over there, so they couldn't keep it secret at that point. This is the new world as it was known. There is this term which is used now, the New World Order.
Yes, well, the New World Order, it is all part of the Satanism. It is all part of the blackness. You meld it together, Hariri, Gates, King Charles, not my king, the lot.
So what's their plan? What do they hope to get out of turning the Holy Land to hell? Because quite obviously they are taking this bit of real estate, which is the most sacred real estate on the planet, and, as I say, just making hell there.
It's a tribute to Satan. It is, in fact, on the sacrifice. The altar's there. They've killed the lamb. They haven't killed Esau or Jacob, I forget which. But this is in the idea. It is a death cult. They like death. And they like destruction. You know, Samson is symbolic of that. And I think, really, although what they're doing in Gaza now is almost beyond belief, but is all forecast in Ilan Pappi's remarkable book, the fact is that it is the Samson option. The Zionists are killing Zionism stone dead.
Well, they're probably the biggest threat to it. What do you think is the object?
I don't know, but they like destruction. And my present definition,
they would probably say, well, all you people out there who are not in the death cult, you're a bunch of lily-livered pussies because you haven't faced up to death. A lot of people just, you like to not think about it. We do think about it, and we have faced up to it. The rest of you are cowards.
I'm not afraid of death at all. I've been nearly killed by the Israelis, by the Zionists twice, last when they rammed us on the 30th of December 2008, 60 miles off Haifa in a force 5 storm in the dark. with three of their ruddy gunboats that do 45 knots. The story's all there. If you look at my website, D-Halpin, D-H-A-L-P-I-N.
Look, come on, we must round up with okay, you well, telling us about that little episode.
That little episode. They rammed us, hoping to kill, drown 16 people.
What ship were you on, and where were you heading?
On the motor vessel Dignity, run by the Free Gaza organization. I joined the ship at 24 hours at Larnaca, and we gunned across the Mediterranean, and we were then in at 5 o'clock in the morning, met by what we thought were two gunboats. In fact, there were three, I learnt later. They were putting a tracer into the sky behind us, astern of us. They came up alongside, then fell back, and eventually at 5:30 in the morning there was a damn great crash on the port bow, another crash almost simultaneously, and then another, then a tinkling glass, and you could hear the ribs breaking of this Italian built boat. Happily it wasn't glass fiber, it was in fact marine ply and very strong. The Zionists thought it was probably glass fiber, GRP. If it was that, we'd have been, it had been smashed immediately. We'd have sunk like a stone with two 750 horsepower Detroit engines in the bilge. And there would have been 16 of us, some sinking already, some with flotation jackets on, which we put on the wrong way around. Opposite was a presidential candidate, the wonderful Cynthia McKinney. She said to me, "David, I cannot swim." And it sounds a bit New Testament in its words. I said, "Do not fear, Cynthia, I will be with you." And I was poisoned previously by the Zionists in Gaza in about 2006, but that story is not on my website. But there's another website which has now been renewed, and it's the Dove and Dolphin website. It's got stories that I accumulated since 2003, and they show you the evil of the death cult, like making sure that Palestinian mummies had their babies on a cold mattress at a checkpoint, and some of the babies suffered cerebral ischemia because they weren't being born in the proper circumstances, and the child has survived in one case. The story's there on Dove and Dolphin. The evil of it is beyond imagining.
And no, there's no excuse for it in this model.
Tony, I love the natural world. I keep saying that no mother and child should be in the least harmed anywhere in our still beautiful world. And I mean every mother and child everywhere in this most beautiful world. These people, they contaminate it with their evil. They serve Satan, Shaitan as the Arabs call it. And most people don't want that. The vision they have inside themselves, they may not express it, is of Mariam or Mary with a baby on her breast. That is the symbol that most humans would want to have in their minds.
But you have to finish the story. How did you get on after you were rammed by the Israeli gunboat?
The boat held up with 12 bilge pumps working, and the master, the first thing he said to us, "You are terrorists." Terrorists. We had not a gun amongst us, not a bullet, any antibiotics from Libya and from Cyprus for the people who were being bombed then in the Operation
Cast Lead.
That's Dreidel. That's the lead spinning top with square faces that they play as a toy in Hanukkah. Do you hear the choice of the title, then? A toy, cast lead, Dreidel, D-R-E-I-D-E-L. We survived, and we changed course. We had to turn turtle. He told us to go back to Larnaca. We had insufficient diesel, and it was the northerly wind. We'd have been shipping water into the hull. If you look at my website, you'll find an image of motor vessel Dignity.
So how did you get on? Did you get into Gaza?
We got to Sur in Libya, in the Lebanon. We were met with vast numbers of crowds all cheering us, and we met with the high command of Lebanon, all mixed up, of course. We went to the government buildings and what have you. We were feted there. We also met, no doubt, Hezbollah. Quite happy to do that. I'll meet any other human being and hear them. I met Hania, the leader of Hamas twice in Gaza.
This is one of the main problems at the moment, that the various countries legitimately elected either governments or militaries are being labelled as terrorists. Yes. So I think we just have to ignore it because, of course, they're not.
I ignore it.
They're not terrorists.
I ignore it.
The real terrorists, of course, have been terrorising the 2.5 million people in Gaza and annoying everybody almost on purpose. But you just accidentally sort of popped in there that there was an attempt to poison you by the Zionists. And I know that there is one of the most malicious parts of the Israeli state and defence forces and intelligence services actually tries. They call themselves experts in faking suicide.
Yes, that's right. Well, I understood this from Rowena Thursby, who was the person who gathered me into the small group fighting for an inquest on Dr. David Kelly. That fight continues in a 20th year. So consider the lawfulness of the British state when it hasn't conducted an inquest into the natural death of Dr. David Kelly, CMG, Doctor of Science. Rowena told me about Kidon, K-I-D-O-N. I'm not sure who she heard it from. She also, in fact, gave me a book came from Ralph Schoenemann called A Hidden History of Zionism. It's online. It's an excellent little book by Ralph, with whom I've corresponded since. I'm grateful to him. He's now, in fact, withdrawn from the media. But Kidon is a unit presumably attached to Mossad, which is expert in faking suicide. They get given the target, i.e. a human, by the high command. They then, in fact, have no further communication with the high command. They go to a safe house, and from there on they plan their attack. The last one I knew about was Mahboub in Dubai, which was engineered by 16 Israeli agents, 9 of whom had cloned British passports, following which there was no British judicial response to Israel, as far as I know, regarding those cloned passports.
So the idea was that these people either commit suicide or have some sort of accidental death, and yes, the coroner will record no suspicious circumstance.
Well, in the case of Mahboub, they use physostigmine, calabar bean, and there's no metabolite left in the body following that. But I don't know how they would have made it look like suicide in a hotel room in Dubai. I don't know. But there's been other instances, as you know. There was that suicide of the fellow who had a mental health history of Fort Detrick, who, in fact, I think, spilt the beans about the anthrax scam. It was a scam. I knew that. I could talk about that, Tony, on another interview. But what I want to say, actually, is that you're sitting here now in the shepherd's hut I built 6 years ago with Richard in the cider orchard, which a few weeks ago in the sun had rosy cider apples glistening in the sun. It's within the wood pasture, beautiful. All there is bird song. There's no warplanes above. There's no drone. There's no one invading our email here, but they're invading my email at home, I can tell you. Opening my post, they're distorting the sound of my telephone coming in, so I can't hear easily with my rather diminished hearing, but the voices are distorted. It's not the phone, it's them. It's them.
Look, let's wind up with just you reminding us of your actual email address, rather than going to Google or any of those awful search engines. What's the actual address? So people can type it in directly.
Is David, don't overwhelm me though, I hope there'll be a few people listening, David, D-A-V-I-D, at InfoAction, one word, I-N, N for Nigel, F for Freddie, O for Orange, action.org.uk. That will find me. I get about 40 a day. Often they're delayed. Some are blocked, particularly during the COVID thing. I haven't heard from Professor Dalgleish or from some other people. I'm sure they're being blocked because I've spoken about COVID from the word go. I smelt a ruddy great rat right from the word go.
Well done. Anyway, David Halpin, thanks very much for joining us once more.
Okay, Tony.